Vectors Radio podcasts are sponsored by Break the Cycle CIC, rebuilding self-esteem in people who have experienced domestic abuse. For more, email hello@breakthecycle.org.uk.
It's a Tuesday lunchtime, and as promised, we've got Paul Grading in. Morning, Paul, or afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Ian.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
And we also got Joe Robertson in as well. Maybe you should have done you first, because you're like the head honcho now, aren't you?
Look, first or second, as long as you mention I'm here, Ian, I'm just grateful. How about that?
Is that all right with you, Paul?
Yes, absolutely fine. I know my place.
Where do we start? Let's start with you first, Joe, because I knew that you were elected because I pay enough attention to it. I knew that you were a councillor before, and then Steve Hastings was the leader, and now he stepped down, and now you're the new opposition leader. And so let's find out a little bit more about you. First of all, this is the first time you've been elected as a councillor. But
yes.
you have history.
Yeah, sure. So I was elected as councillor for Benbridge in May. Before that, I've been involved on the island political scene for quite some time now. I was previously parish council chairman in St Helens, and I've been involved in the local Conservatives for, I guess, since I was at school.
Okay, so there you are. I mean, can I ask how old you are?
I am 37.
So he's much younger than us, Paul.
Yeah, cheers, Ian.
So what's it been like, you know, taking over? Because obviously, you know, I would imagine that the group of people that have voted you in and said, right, you're going to be our new leader, they would expect you to be at some point the council leader. So is that an added pressure? Is that what you're working towards?
Yes, so the political maths at County Hall is there are 17 Alliance councillors, 18 Conservative councillors and four non-aligned. So it's important we work together. We're not going to get any business done at the council if we don't work together. But that doesn't mean there's not opportunity for political debate and disagreement. The public would expect that. So yeah, there are certainly pressures in being leader because you're expected to step up and show leadership. But look, I'm 6 or 7 weeks in now. There's been Christmas in between, and at the moment things are going well. And I'm grateful to experienced people like Paul here, who's been in the cabinet, supporting me as my deputy.
Okay, well, I mean, the way I look at it is, I don't care what colour you are. I don't care what if you're a blue or a red or a green or a yellow. I just want the Isle of Wight to flourish. I want the Isle of Wight to be the best it can possibly be. And there is an element, there's a massive element where I'm concerned is take the colours out of it and let's just get on with the job and try and do all of those things I've just mentioned, just be the best we can possibly be here on the Isle of Wight. Is that, do you find that there is like a political thing, and does it get in the way?
I think most people agree with you, Ian. Most people would say take the political colours out of it. And by and large, a lot of work gets done where councillors broadly agree. But we're bound to disagree on certain things, and it's right that we do. You know, the public would expect that debate and scrutiny. But, you know, we're already working together across chamber on planning, on environment, on a range of issues. Does politics get in the way? Yeah, I guess sometimes, but by and large, the majority of the work we do is, you know, it's legitimate debate between people who want the same objectives, but they disagree on how best to achieve those objectives.
Okay, at the moment, I'm hearing that there is discussions about budgets and things like that. How much of a, you know, I mean, I'd like to think that you guys sit down and say, hey, look, here's where we can make some savings, here's where we can maybe make some cuts and so on. Do you all get around the table, or is it all like independently done?
So the Alliance are in administration and control of the council, so they will present a budget. The officers are there to speak to all councillors and advise all councillors about putting forward budgets, and any councillor can put forward a budget. I've already reached out to Chris Jarman, and I'm grateful for him speaking to me. He's the Alliance councillor responsible for strategic finance, and we've already had a conversation. He'll be publishing a draft, I think, at the end of this month, and we'll get to see that. Where we agree with him, we'll support him. Where we disagree with him, we'll propose amendments. So, yeah, there's absolutely an opportunity for us to talk across the chamber, and Chris and I are already doing that.
Well, that sounds positive.
I think it is positive. Oh, feels positive.
It did. I'll be honest. In years gone by, and I'm talking, you know, a number of years ago, probably 4 or 5. You know, you'd hear about the budgets and the arguments of, well, they got this and they won't talk to them and so on. And you just think, surely if you've got someone that has knowledge, you know, good knowledge of and expertise, and they've been doing the job for a long time, it's, you know, it don't matter what colour shirt they're wearing, involve them because they may be able to shed some light on the situation that might make things better.
Yeah, I think it's hard for some councillors who've been doing it a while and they've been a bit battered and bruised by the political game. Understandably, it's hard to sort of put that to one side, put the history to one side. But by and large, that's what most people want. And there's new councillors across the chamber, new Conservatives, new Alliance members who've only elected in May. And with that comes a bit of, you know, breath of fresh air. You know, new broom sweeps clean, but we rely on old hands here like Paul Brading to you know, keep that almost that long-term knowledge of what's gone on before to help decision making.
Well, let's bring in Paul now, because most people know Paul, but just to recap, Paul is one of those guys that I look at and I think, yeah, he might be a Tory, but he's a decent bloke, because you do so much stuff. I mean, you invited me to a dinner late last year. There was funds put the 4Ps way, and we're still waiting for the stuff to be, well, it's ordered. We're still waiting for it. But I mean, you've always struck me as someone that cares. And I've always said, to be a good counsellor, you need two qualities. One to care and the other to listen.
I think you're right. And it's thanks for saying it. You know, I much appreciate it. I'll give an example. I had an email from a resident on Sunday evening, and just about the state of her road in my ward. And I emailed her back Sunday evening and said, I'll pop round and see you Tuesday morning. I went around now on the way here this morning, and she said to me, blimey, you know, I'm so impressed you actually answered my email. I didn't expect even to get an answer, let alone someone to come round and have a chat to me. Now, I'm not going to promise I'm going to get that road resurfaced for her, but the fact that I actually went around and listened to her, she thinks, you know, that's what a councillor should do. And on the subject of the budget, interesting, this time last year, when we put together the current budget that the administration are working to, we actually did a second year's budget preparation. So for me, it'd be interesting to see when Councillor Jarman produces their draft budget, have they completely torn up the, you know, all the hard work budget planning we've done for this year with officers, or are they using the basis of our second year budget? Yeah, yes, they'll tweak it, of course they will. But yeah, we, 80% of this year's budget, we actually thought about last year when we presented last year's budget. After, you know, so hopefully, you know, they won't rip all that up. It is annoying when you lose control of the council, or lose in the short or whatever, however long it is, we aren't in control. You know, there's things that you had in place that were going through. Hopefully they won't all get ripped up. The evidence so far is they are getting ripped up and start again, which is not good for island people, of course, because as you say, I'm an islander and I want what's right for the island.
Well, I've said numerous times that I didn't agree with the naming of staff and so on. That was something that I looked at and thought people didn't deserve that. And my question would be, why did you pick a fight with people that you didn't need to pick a fight with, that obviously at some point will go and vote? Yeah, have you thought about that long term? You know, I just think that leaves a bit of a bad feeling. There's a few other things that I didn't agree with, but at the same time, I think it was necessary to have some kind of change, because they've got to make their mark, and I get that. But I just wonder how much work between the two groups of people is there? Is there an us and a them? Was there an us and a them? Is it getting better now because it's a case of, hey, look, we've got to work together?
Yeah, a lot of issues, particularly ward issues. We obviously all each represent our own communities. A lot of those issues in our communities are only going to get done by working together, working with officers, as you've mentioned them, but also working with other councillors. So I take a good example. I represent Bembridge. A lot of issues, particularly with cycleways and walking and bridleways, affect Brading and St Helens as well. Jonathan Bacon is councillor for Brading and St Helens. He's an Alliance cabinet member. On local community issues, Jonathan and I do work together very, very well. We have to. It's right that we do.
Excellent. Because I say, I think that you just mentioned Jonathan there. I'm a big fan of Jonathan Bacon because I think he's one of those people that does care. And I look at that lady that sadly lost her life as a Labour MP a few years ago, and there was a saying that she had, and I thought, yeah, that's about right. That really is about right. There's more that combines us or that divides us, and I just think that's something that we need to push to one side and do what's best for the Isle of Wight. And I mean, me in my little world, which is, you know, perfect, I look at Paul and I think, well, he lost the cabinet role, and I'm thinking, but he was doing such a great job. And, you know, that's not just my opinion. That was the opinion of numerous teachers that I spoke to afterwards that are linked with Vectis Radio and the 4Ps training school and so on. And it's not a slight on the lady that's taken over either. But I look at it and I think, well, how much of you peeps are working together? You know, just say, for instance, if I'd have taken over your role, Paul, the first thing I would have done is given you a call and said, look, can you give me some advice? Because the outcome is that things are better.
Mm-hmm. It's good, actually, because I've spoken to two head teachers recently. There's been two schools on the island with Sharon at Broadley and Alex at St Francis, who've just had good Ofsted reports. I knew those schools were good from visits I'd had with them, and I've been in touch with both of those head teachers saying, you know, congratulations, they were deserved, because, you know, I still care about the schools, and I still take an interest in them, and I still visit certain schools. We've got a good rapport with the heads, so I want to try and help them. And those two schools in particular have, you know, there's no Ofsteds done during COVID, but those two that I thought would go good have gone good, and I'm, you know, proud of both of those schools.
No, excellent. I mean, that shows one thing, that you weren't just doing the job, just going through the motions. No, actually, you're now not doing the job, but you're kind of still going through the motions of doing all those things that you used to do before, which I think it's a lovely thing. And I would look at it, if I was opposition, I'd be now thinking, well, hang on a minute, how can we involve you more? Let's forget the politics. So, I mean, can I ask you a question? Do you feel like you've been pushed out and not involved, or do you have to involve yourself or so on? Or is it a case of, no, it's very agreeable, and you can go into those schools and you can pass information to other people and say, look, this is how I would do it.
The encouraging thing for me is the schools I've contacted to say, look, I'm still here. They've invited me in because the value of my visits to the schools, they've welcomed. One school, I've actually become a school governor at one of the schools because they wanted me to help so much. I've now become a school governor. So every head I've contacted has said, you know, even though you're not a cabinet member, we value you, please still come in and visit us. And I have done.
That's brilliant. That is really good. And that's, again, it shows the fact that you care. It'd have been quite easy enough. It'd been easy to sort of walk away and say, do you know what, I don't care anymore, and just leave it at that. But obviously,
I can't do that.
And I say that is to me, that's the mark of a good counsellor. It's a case of, you know, you listen and you care, and that's the two qualities that you've got to have. If you haven't got those qualities, then to me, you're not going to do a very good job. Do you want to deal with the elephant in the room?
I can't see it, so yeah. Tell me, what is it? It
doesn't start with F, does it?
Do you know what? It's one of those things that I feel kind of sorry for anybody that has to live under an umbrella of national politics. Oh. When certain people have not acted in the way that they should, but everyone would then look at you and say you're part of that connection and so on, and you just think that the current situation, it's just not going to go away. And I find sometimes when I'm listening to a Conservative politician on the telly, I'm just thinking, why don't you just be honest and say, look, we mucked up? Or better, if someone has done what they're being accused of doing, they deserve whatever's coming their way. Not to say, push it away and say, well, we didn't do anything wrong. We didn't do anything wrong. That must be tough for you to work under that cloud.
So we talk about allegations about parties and number 10, the Prime Minister. I think MPs, all MPs, but in this case, Conservative MPs, are a little bit too cautious here. I think it's perfectly possible for a Conservative politician, and I'm going to say it, if the Prime Minister's done something wrong, then the consequences should follow for him as well as anyone else. The same for staff and number 10, the same for anyone. I, I, I don't find it difficult to say that, but I think sometimes MPs are just a little bit cautious about going that far because they're worried about the media. They're worried that, you know, their words will be misconstrued. But it's perfectly possible to say, if Boris has done something wrong, the consequences should follow. I'm not responsible for those consequences, but I wouldn't defend him if he's done something wrong.
Joe, I've got to be honest, Joe, that's refreshing. That's all people want to hear, is when you muck up, you just say you mucked up. Because, look, we all do. We all get things wrong, but it's almost like that they never get anything wrong. But honestly, it's really refreshing. So you're never going to get an argument with me. I'm not going to pin you down and make you look stupid or anything like that. You know, to me, it's a case of let's get the facts out there. Let's get your thoughts out there. Your thoughts are quite clear. And again, I respect them. So thank you. It's just a shame that other people aren't quite so honest. But I totally get the media thing. Mm. The media are there to sort of trip you up, and they want the bun fight. They want the argument. They want you to trip up. They want you to be roasted because that brings more attention to them. And that's not right. That's not what it's about. And it should never be about that.
If there was no party, just say so.
Yeah.
It's not difficult. You've been accused of something. You know, you just have your say. Was there a party, yes or no?
Yeah.
If there wasn't, we move on. If there was... As Joe said, the consequences.
I think there was. Have you noticed that there was a guy that was... Martin somebody or other was the scapegoat. There's always going to be a scapegoat, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Hey, look, when you're in the process of rebuilding and so on, but you're still having to work and so on, what's the thing that's most important that you want to do? As a councillor?
As a councillor, I mean, my priority will always be the people of Bembridge because they're the people who elected me. But there's two functions to being a councillor broadly. There's representing your community, and that can include just about anything. Before Christmas, I was delivering sandbags to a local resident who had an issue with flooding. You know, that's not in a councillor's job description, but that's the sort of thing that I think most councillors do. But at County Hall centrally, we're obviously responsible for overseeing running the council, even if we're not in administration. We're there performing a scrutiny function. I think there are two big issues over the course of the next year. One will be the budget. Councillors are always thinking about the budget this time of year. But now there is planning. We had the draft island planning strategy was put forward by the Alliance back in September time, and it'll come back out for consultation soon, I think, in a matter of weeks. And there's a real debate going on over the island about affordable homes. House prices have rocketed since COVID all over, particularly in my ward. And I think there's a legitimate debate. How do we deliver affordable homes for islanders, and where do we deliver those homes? I've already been speaking in the media about keeping brownfield sites as an absolute priority. If building is going to be done, it should be done on brownfield sites where it can be. And more specifically, keeping Camp Hill, the Camp Hill site, on the map. You know, other councillors have said to me, well, the council doesn't own it. That doesn't mean it shouldn't be a strategic goal to ensure that houses are put on that site, if it becomes available.
Okay, so lots of talk about the Camp Hill situation. I mean, rumours were that it was going to be a council where the council reside and so on. So that's not going to happen now. You want it for housing?
I think what we know right now is it belongs to the MOJ, the Ministry of Justice, and there have been conversations long before my time when Paul was in administration about the council securing it for housing. My priority for the Isle of Wight is to secure that site for island needs. I think at the moment the biggest island need for that site would be housing. And I'm not talking about necessarily housing for the entire site, because there's quite a lot of greenfield that comes with it. But certainly there is room there for significant housing delivery. And it would be a great place for affordable housing. On the edge of Newport, you've got employment, you've got shops, you're not that far from links to the mainland as well. So that would be my priority, if we could secure the site for that purpose.
Okay, some people will say, I mean, I look at it logically. We've just had roads put in and... And I've got to be honest, whoever's idea that was a brilliant idea, because it all works. And those people that are travelling up the dual carriageway and going towards Cowes and vice versa, it's a little bit more tidy up there. It's a little bit more speedy. You know, it's not like massive queues like there was before. So, you know, that kind of works. But would it have a knock-on effect if you had a load of housing that was suddenly on Camp Hill? Is that going to make the situation worse? Can it handle it?
That was part of the planning for that road junction, was to have extra capacity in the network for housing on the area, because quite often you put housing in with that infrastructure. In this case, the infrastructure has now been put in. So if we were able to get housing on that brownfield element of Camp Hill, then the infrastructure was already there for that purpose. And housing is, as Josie said, big. There's, I think it was well over 2,000 houses with planning permission that haven't yet been built. And the Isle of Wight has got a housing problem. The housing is, in general, just desperately needs sorting out to give our young islanders and young families a place to live on the island that they can afford.
I know, speaking to a councillor a long time ago, 10 years ago, they said that the actual waiting list for a house is incredible. There's hundreds of people that are waiting, possibly thousands by now. So, you know, totally get we've got to build houses because the population is getting bigger. But I do worry about they're all going to be in the same place in Newport. Now, I live in Newport and it's busy anyway. But when you say, oh, it's not going to be, you know, in place, just places like Benbridge, what are you saying? You're not going to build any houses in Benbridge because you want to keep it sort of, I don't know, quiet, and otherwise your property prices go down. What would you do? I mean, I'm just thinking now there'll be people out there asking that question.
No, I agree with you. Houses should be built in all sorts of different places on the island, be that in our towns and be that in our villages. But they need to be built in places that can accommodate them. And if that means making infrastructure improvements first, you know, so be it. Good. That's what we need. And take Benbridge, for example, because there's currently a planning application for 57 homes on a field. I've been making the case that the infrastructure is not there for existing homes. Benbridge is currently subject to a statutory flood investigation by the Isle of Wight Council because flooding was so bad in the village over July, summer months. And the council have basically said, we don't know why, so we have instructed consultants to investigate the flooding issues. I mean, people have had to move out of their homes. And bearing in mind, this is July. This is not a winter event. This was in July. Move out of their homes because their ground floors have been completely flooded out. Yet at the same time, we're looking at an application to build 57 new homes on the same road that was flooded. So I think when we get down to the detail, it's perfectly acceptable to say this application is not appropriate for this place at this time. And that's the argument I've been saying, be making. And it's not anti-building at all. You know, building has to be in the right place.
I'm guessing for the same reasons on Gunville as well. There was quite a number of houses there that has been put on hold. There's a little bit of confusion. I think there's a little bit of I don't know, grumpiness from certain people. And I look at it and I think, well, I know the Gunville Road. I used to live up at Alvington Manor View, and that road has always been a bit of a nightmare. And I think a number of people have said, look, before you can actually think about building houses, you need to make this road safer, mm-hmm. because it is a massive accident waiting to happen. It's all, I mean, you look at pinch points and so on, and those pinch points don't work because we all probably try and I think they're named pinch points because you want to pinch a bit of space before someone else does.
Well, people try to pinch through before you get there. But there is an application, of course, for the land behind that pinch point.
Yeah.
At the moment, going, you know, for outline planning for, you know, a sizable number of houses between there and Carisbrook College. There are pockets of land that can be built on safely with infrastructure in place. But the Camp Hill is a big site that we could have investigated further. We, you know, got an agreement with them last year for some funding for the estate. Once you start tapping into the MOG, yes, it takes time. Work with them on a long-term strategy rather than just cut it off as a dead duck, which, you know...
The council leader told her cabinet before Christmas, the Ministry of Justice have got my phone number, they know where I am. I don't think that's good enough for a leader of a council. I think we've got to be more proactive than that. We've got to go back to the MOJ, keep having those conversations, keep the relationship going. We've got to show leadership and ambition. only then will the Ministry of Justice realise that the Isle of Wight Council rises to the top of the list, and because they have a plan for that site. I think while we do a sit back and wait and see approach, you know, wait for the world to come to us, it may not happen.
Mm. Well, just in her defence, I look at that and I think this has been going on for a number of years, so she's probably cottoned on to the fact that, you know, I can't speak for her, but I'm thinking, well, because this has been going on for a number of years and knowing how slow they are, you know, maybe you've got to focus on other things while Rome is burning.
I certainly wouldn't be suggesting that Camp Hill's the only option, but, you know, this is the Isle of Wight Council. We can prioritise more than one site, more than two sites, more than three sites at the same time. Look, I understand the challenges. There are a lot of challenges with Camp Hill, the site itself. But I think we've got to be ambitious. You know, we've got to, you know, as I keep saying, we've got to show leadership and go out there and make the case. And by all means, they've got other sites that they want to bring forward. And I've been communicating with Ian Stevens, the deputy leader, over that. That's great. But it's not a reason not to keep up those relationships with the Ministry of Justice that the previous administration had. And of course, work with Bob Seeley to try and secure that site too.
How can we make them listen then? Because let's be honest, I'll take you back to 2001, 21 years ago. We had this thing on the island where the late Harry Rees and I worked together to get 21,000 signatures, go up to Tony Blair, give him 21,000 signatures and say, we don't want to be lumped in with Hampshire statistically, funding-wise, because we get a bad deal out of it. And we've had a bad deal out of things for too many years. That's continued. We had 21,000 signatures. We went up there. They sent an MP down, Alan Johnson, and all of the, I've got to be honest with you, all of the council peeps, whatever they were, whatever colours they were more interested in what it was like to be Tony Blair's deputy than ask him the question. And I very abruptly, in this conversation, said, never mind all that, are you actually going to listen to what we actually want? We want to be put in, you know, a different statistic so we can get more money for islanders. Not interested, but if you were ever interested in a not a floating bridge, but a tunnel or a connection, the government would listen. And, you know, I was disgusted by that, absolutely disgusted, but I was more disgusted with the fact that there were hangers-on businesses that never went to the march, they never signed the petition, but they were hoping, they were their handout, hoping to get something from it. But in 21 years now, I'm thinking, and beyond that, we highlighted that in 2001, it's still going on. The Isle of Wight is still forgotten about, and we don't get the finances and the support and the recognition that we actually deserve.
It's really hard work negotiating with government of all political colours. As you've just highlighted, that was in the days of a Labour government, you know, and now we've got a Conservative government. I think lobbying with government as a local authority is an ongoing, complex situation. Of course, the officers do a lot of work behind the scenes with Whitehall, a lot of very positive work. But I think this is my point, isn't it? That, you know, to say, well, you guys have got my number is not proactive enough. I think the island would expect us to do more. And even though you're saying there was an example 21 years ago, despite all that effort, you didn't get what the island rightfully deserved. It shouldn't stop us from trying and continuing to try.
No, we should, but then there comes a time when you think, well, you're just not listening, and you're just not going to get us anything. And I mean, we keep talking about an island deal, and I'm not even sure what the island deal was ever going to look like, to be honest.
The original thoughts with the island deal was going to be a lump sum of money was going to suddenly arrive. 6.4 million was what they worked out. The University of Portsmouth did a study on how much underfunded we were, and the expectation was, come on, Boris, let's have a £6.4 million one-off payment. But it's not about a one-off payment, it's about continual payments, because there's no payment for 1 year.
Yeah, sure.
We need that recognition year on year. And as Joe said, you know, I always like to make a decision, box it up, move on to another one. I learned through politics, when I first got into politics, you have to keep banging the drum with government. This is a continual message over and over again. And ultimately, you do get, you know, through that consistent approach, and taking the lead and being on the front foot with this, you do eventually get listened to. But then, you know, they listen to every council across the country. we're going to make sure we're at the front of their mind. And Bob does a great job also in raising the island's profile. When Bob speaks, every time Bob speaks, the response always from the front bench is, you know, thank you, Miss Seeley, for your passion about the Isle of Wight. Because he does passionately talk about what we need.
Sure.
It's frustrating it doesn't come through straight away, but we've got to keep on. There's no point dropping things, just keep on doing it.
But then, yeah, there comes a time when you have to look at what you do and how you can do, you know, your job during the course of the day. And there's certain things that, right, I'm not going to change that. I'm not going to change it for the time being. I need to focus on these things now because they're really, really vital, rather than keep knocking on a door that ain't going to be answered for a number of months, years or whatever.
But don't drop it. Just keep it there. Keep doing it and add other things to it. Yeah. There's more than one ways.
Look, Ian, this is a good example of a difference of opinion, isn't it? You know, the Alliance think that, you know, having that ongoing relationship with the Ministry of Justice, talking about Camp Hill, is not a priority for them. I think it should be. Ultimately, the people will decide, you know, islanders will decide, you know, who they agree with. It's you know, it's perfectly acceptable to disagree on an issue. And you know, I'm grateful for Ian Stevens engaging me, you know, with me on it. I wish he'd said yes to my request at a meeting. But you know what? I'm going to practice what I preach and I'm going to ask him again.
Well, good for you. I mean, I look at it as it's not an argument. It's a different point of view. And that's all it is. It's a different... You'll see things differently to me. I had a heated discussion with my mum recently. Something stupid. Let's digress a little bit. There was Sarah Ferguson. She was on the telly. She was selling a book on some particular programme. And she refused to talk about Chapter 3. Whatever was in Chapter 3, it was vital. Okay? And she refused to talk about it. The interviewer pushed and pressed. And she was... She was adamant. I'm not talking about Chapter 3. And my mum was disgusted by this. She went on there to sell her book. She should be talking about Chapter 3. And I said, look at it from another point of view. And it's not, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's right or you're wrong. But by highlighting Chapter 3 was a bit juicy, how many people are then going to say, I'm going to go and buy the book?
Yeah.
So when people disagree, when people have... No, it's not... To me, it's just another point of view, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're wrong or you're right. And I think as soon as we can sit down and we can see other people's points of view and we can work together and we can say, do you know what? That idea that you had was a really good idea. I wish we'd have thought of it. And until we reach those points, we're always going to be like us and them. And the people that suffer are the people that voted. The people that voted everybody in. Now, I live in a little world that is lovely and perfect, and that's what I'd love to see. And I know that that's never, ever going to happen. But it'd be nice if it did, because at the end of the day, we all benefit.
Yeah, well, here's another example on you know, working together. Paul Fuller, Cabinet Member for Planning, and I had a councillor disagreement before Christmas that certainly all councillors will have seen the email exchange. But he came to Benbridge last week to speak to residents about planning. I was very grateful for him doing that. And of course, he and I shook hands or nudged hands and took questions between us. It wasn't an opportunity for the two of us to sort of bite chunks out of each other, because that wasn't why we were in Benbridge Village Hall. We were there from our own perspectives, me as ward councillor, Paul as cabinet member, to answer questions. So I think sometimes councillors can take it a little bit personally. And I think sometimes the public can maybe misinterpret a political argument as something more deep-seated and more personal than it really is. It's not to say politicians aren't often to blame for making it look like that. But, you know, we can disagree on certain things and we can work together on others all at the same time.
Mm. I think that majorly, media as well have played their part in making people fall out more because they stir it up and so on. And I think it's a case you'll never get that here. It is just a case of you come in, you talk, you tell us what you're going to do, we'll ask you some questions politely. They might be a bit tricky, they might be a bit stinky, but we won't put them in an aggressive way that we suddenly look like we're having an argument and we're falling out. No, I just want the best for the Isle of Wight. I've always wanted the best for the Isle of Wight. I don't care who's at the wheel. As long as they're listening and caring, that's all we can ever want. I've got to come back and ask you, Paul, because we're running out of time. What are you up to at the moment? Because I know you're a busy boy, and you said about the you know, going round to people's houses and saying about the, you know, explaining why the roads are bad and so on. What else are you doing?
I'm still working as hard in my ward as I was. I've just become a governor at Broadley School, which I'm very pleased and proud to do. Good school, my local school, where I was the first kid to go there. We're busy organising a 50th anniversary celebration of the school this April with Susie Sheldon coming to open the new library in place of Lord Mountbatten, who opened the school originally. I'm supporting Joe in really getting the Conservative group now really focused on what's important for the island. You know, when you don't have control of it after an election, you've got to readjust. I think you've got to focus on your wards, which we're all doing. We initially set up some sort of shadow cabinet structure, which didn't really work. Now we've got a more strategic leadership team. We're working with supporting the Alliance political group on all the decisions that they make. But having said that, if they make some a decision that we don't agree with, we'll hold them to account and challenge them on why. Well, why are they doing it? What's the benefit to the island? Because our role really is to hold them to account and work with them, depending upon, you know, whether we feel they're doing the right thing for the island. I'm playing a lot of golf. I'm spending a bit of time with my granddaughter. Really, you know, what I did learn being a cabinet member was you get invited to sit on loads and loads of committees, you know, and you think, well, you know, you've got to be, your time gets really, really sucked up with doing things. So prioritising my time now and what's important to the island, and so just going and seeing a school, not as a cabinet member, is a different visit, but nevertheless, that is one that helps the school to develop.
And that's the point I want to make. Thank you for that. I want to make about that, about councillors, and that is, you know, if you've got someone like yourself that actually gets out there, goes around, talks to people and listens to people, and you know, someone's invited you around and so on. I just think that's a brilliant thing, and I think people forget that sometimes, that you are busy. It doesn't sound like you have much time to yourself.
No.
And you know, and I know that you're, you know, like me, you're getting towards the years that we should be slowing down a bit, and we should be like spending time with the grandkids and so on, and maybe having a bit of me time. But at the same time, you're not forgetting the people that actually voted for you.
Funny, short example, the woman I spoke to, this morning, said, "If you remember when you were delivering your leaflets, I spoke to you and said, I'll vote for you if you get my road sorted out. Well, here I am talking to you about your road. I can't promise you I'll get a new road surface for you, but I'm here talking to you, as I said I would." And that's, don't overpromise, but just respond to people and talk to people.
Okay, well, before we, because we've only got literally minutes to go, as a leader, what's the, just say for instance, if you became the leader of the council, what's the one promise, what's the one thing that you would say that you would do?
I'd be prepared to work with all councillors, and what I mean by that is I'd be prepared to put a coalition cabinet together. If I were to take over as leader before the next election, I'd be prepared to have non-conservative councillors in a cabinet. That's my promise. And the door would be open for those conversations.
God, you know what? That's refreshing to hear. That really is refreshing to hear. And it's, and I know that there'll be some people, cynics, that'll be saying, yeah, that'll never happen. But maybe it should. And maybe if it did, maybe it'll be a new world for politics. Because at the moment, I'll be honest with you, politics is dirty. Politics, you look at these national politicians, all of them, it's dirty. It, clean it up. Work, do what you're supposed to do for the people, and don't, like, you're not on stage. It's not a, I don't get that. It's almost like it's an act. I don't want you to act. I want you to act, but in the right way. I want you to act on behalf of the people. So what I've heard, two refreshing things from you, Joe, and I'm going to go away with a bit of a spring in my step. You know, one, you've been honest about national politicians, and you know, face the consequences if you've messed up. And what you've just said then about a coalition working together, let's make that happen.
Well, you've got me on radio saying it, so I absolutely play it back to me if I'm ever in that position. My door will be open to a coalition cabinet if I ever in the position of leader.
I never thought I'd ever say anything nice about a Conservative on the airways.
Well, there we go.
Without having to be polite and levelling things up. No, I genuinely mean it. It's a really refreshing thing to hear. Thank you for coming in, both of you.
Thanks,
Ian. And thank you. I really hope it won't be long before you're back again, soon.
Definitely. Thanks very much.
Anytime. We're happy to come on air and have a discussion with you anytime.
Brilliant. Thank you, Paul. And thank you, Joe. Good luck. It's 11 minutes to one. We're going to take a break, play a couple of tunes up to the 1 o'clock news, and then there's Ronaldo with the afternoon show.